You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hey there, welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is Chad. Thanks for joining us again this week, downloading the podcast. Always appreciate it. Hope you'll tell your friends about us, and I hope you'll give us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. It really mean a lot. Helps people find us if you leave us a rating and a review. This is a fun episode of Red Leg Nation Radio. I had a chance earlier this week to talk to Reggie Sanders. You might remember Reggie Sanders. That guy used to play right field for the Cincinnati Reds. Finished 6th in the MVP voting in 95. Fantastic year and a fantastic career for the Reds. And, you know, Reggie's one of the finalists, I guess you would call him, one of the 6 players on the Reds Modern Player ballot for the Reds Hall of Fame this year, the class of 2018. And to me, it's really a shame that Reggie hasn't already been inducted. And I'd like to see him be inducted this time around. Other great candidates on that list. Of course, Adam Dunn. I've got no arguments with Adam Dunn. No arguments really with any of them. But it just seems like it's been an oversight that Reggie Sanders is not in the Hall of Fame right now. So let's get him in. The Reds Hall of Fame. You might be surprised to learn. I was surprised that Reggie, first of all, he's 20th in career wins above replacement. Reds franchise history among position players, 20th. He has the highest amount of wins above replacement of anyone who's not actually in the Hall of Fame, the Reds Hall of Fame right now. And actually that's not true. There are 2 others, Joey Votto and Brandon Phillips, who are still active and not yet eligible for the Hall of Fame. But anyone who's eligible is in. That's ahead of Reggie on the list. Reggie's also that 1995 season. It was the season Barry Larkin won the National League MVP. Actually, Reggie had the highest wins above replacement total on the Reds that year. And just a fantastic season, an all-star. And only one right fielder in the history of the Reds has ever put together a season better than Reggie Sanders' 1995. If you go by wins above replacement, that other right fielder is a guy named Frank Robinson, who actually turned 82 years old today. Happy birthday, Frank. Now, Frank did have 3 better seasons than Reggie's best, but no other right fielder in Reds history has had a better season by wins above replacement than Reggie Sanders, 1995. So I think people kind of forget that he was that good. It's been 20 years now since he was a regular in at Riverfront Stadium / Synergy Field. It's and some of the memories of Reggie are caught up in that 1995 National Championship Series. He talks about that a little bit here in the interview. And, you know, it is what it is, but you can't let that have an effect on the way you remember Reggie Sanders' career, because it really was a good career. I sort of went out on a limb and said that I was supporting him and I was encouraging people to support him before I'd ever spoken to Reggie Sanders. I've never had any interaction with him until after that. And I did get a chance to speak with him and meet him over the last week. And the nicest guy. His reputation, obviously, is known far and wide as being one of the nicest guys around, and really doing great work with his foundation to help families with autistic family members. And so, and we'll talk about that a little bit in the podcast interview here. So I'm not going to talk anymore. I know you're here to listen to Reggie Sanders. I really had a good time talking to him. Hope you guys enjoy this as much as I enjoyed doing it. Pretty good run in Cincinnati.
Thank you. Yeah. So You know, well, first of all, thank you so much for the willingness to have me really share my time in Cincinnati, but more importantly, what Cincinnati and the Cincinnati Reds have been able to do at the beginning of my career for 17 years playing in the majors. At the time when I started with Cincinnati, I was in college at Spartanburg Methodist College, and I got drafted my first year and didn't sign, and ended up signing my second year. And then I ended up going to Billings, Montana.
You're picking the seventh round, right? Seventh round in 87, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, so picked in the seventh round. And then ended up going to Billings, Montana. So remind you that, you know, being in Florence, a small town, and we leave our front door open, very conservative Christian family. And so leaving home for the very first time in those terms was kind of daunting and a little scary.
Especially
nonetheless,
at 19 or 20 years old, I'd say that was.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, my mom is a single parent as well. And so she gave me the love and support, and so I needed to just go out and do what I needed to do. So I went to Billings, Montana, and it was a beautiful country, the people were warm, and the field was at that time I thought was amazing, looking back on it, but the experience was phenomenal. I still talk to a lot of the players that I played with during that time, and I posted a picture yesterday on Facebook that from Billings, Montana, and some of the players were like, "Man, we remember those days." So thanks for reminding us. But yeah, that was an amazing time. Was Billings, Montana, and then from Billings, Montana, I went to I think it was Greensboro Hornets.
Yes,
and which was in North Carolina, and that was obviously a lot closer to home. My mom could come, and my family could come and see me quite often. And that was a time, I think, when I ended up breaking my fibula and fracturing my tibia, and there was a base hit that I hit in between. Shortstop and third base, and I was rounding the bag. The guy bobbled the ball in left field, and then so I tried to get to second base. Would have made the base, but then what happened? My cleat when I was sliding got caught into second base, and then ended up twisting, well, actually fracturing my ankle. And so so the love that was shown at that time, because obviously it ended my season, I'm hoping that it did not end my career. And I was able to, the Reds were able to find a doctor that was just phenomenal, and ended up going through the process in terms of, I still have the plate and seven screws today in my ankle. But nonetheless, was able to have a perfect doctor that could do what he needed to do to get me back to good health, and it didn't stop me from there. And so
I think it was Cedar Rapids.
I'm sorry,
Cedar Rapids. The next year looks like you bounced back really well, because I think you were the Midwest League MVP and named the top prospect in that league that year. If I'm looking at it correctly.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me. Yeah, so that was obviously a good time as well, and I was just eager to get back and really prove to myself and obviously to the organization, you know, that they could believe in me. And so I was able to go out and really show my talent and open some eyes within the organization. And then that was another amazing year as well.
And that was the year that the Reds won the World Series, and you made your actual big league debut the following year. What was it like coming onto a team the year after they won that World Series, and it had been your organization since you were drafted? How was that coming in on that team the following August?
Yeah, so that was a little nerve-wracking as well, because when I got the you know, obviously as a young player, we're always watching the big guys and seeing what they do and just hoping one day you would get that call. And so I finally had the opportunity I got the call. And, I was in Knoxville, Tennessee at the time. And so it was Jim Bowden that had called. And so he said, hey, you know, Eric Davis was injured, and we believe that, you know, you could fill his shoes, you know, while he's out. And I'm like, man, stop playing. What are you talking about? Like, are you serious?
Eric Davis, right.
He's like, yeah, he's like, no. He's like, man, no, I am serious. This is a real call. So I literally, I mean, I didn't even wait to hear what he had to say. I hung up the phone, called my mom immediately, and said, Mom, I'm going to the show. And she's like, what? You're going to the show? And I'm like, oh, my gosh. She's like, I'll be on the first plane there. I'll beat you before you get there. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So anyway, so I was like, I got to call Jim back. So I called Jim back, and so we set it up. And I just remember I wasn't able to pack that day because I needed to get on the plane as quickly as I could. So I had my friends to really do that. But the experience in terms of when I got there, was just, I mean, it was a dream come true. It was a dream come true because, you know, being, you know, growing up in South Carolina, the Braves was my team, TBS, because of, you know, that was always on television. So getting an opportunity to really, being from a small town, to be one of the first major league players to actually make it to the majors was just a phenomenal, you know, not only for my psyche, but just for, you know, everything that was paved before me. So getting there and going into the clubhouse and everyone welcoming me and you know, the Reds being a phenomenal organization, Joe Nuxall, I remember him. I mean, he's just I think he was my first interview when I got there, and then putting on that uniform and getting my first locker, and Lou Piniella was a manager at that time. And it was just a dream come true. And I think we were playing the Mets at the time. So I remember when I was, they called my name. And obviously you run out to the field. And so the first ball that was hit to me, I mean, literally, I could not wait for the ball to come down. So I literally jumped up to catch the ball. My feet would not stay on the ground. So, I mean, it was just the crowd. I mean, it was something to remember. And that's that feeling I would never, ever forget. And that's one of the things that, you know, I work part time for the Kansas City Royals. So that's one of the things that I share quite often in terms of, you know, the first in terms of the organization giving you an opportunity to live out your dream. You may not end it there, but that first is always something that you will never forget. So always treasure that.
Absolutely. And I look at I pulled up the game, and you know, you're the leadoff hitter in your first game. You're playing center field, which is where Eric Davis had roamed for many years. Hitting right behind you in the lineup, Barry Larkin, on the defending world champions. I mean, what a situation.
Hey, Matt. Yeah, absolutely. So Barry is Barry. And so I remember being in Cedar Rapids, and they said, Reggie, so I came up as a shortstop. So maybe people remember or don't, but maybe don't. But right. I came up as a shortstop. So they said, you know, hey, Reggie, we have Barry Larkin here. We love what you can do, but we believe from an organizational standpoint that center field or the outfield would be the best scenario for you getting to the major leagues quickly. So I let my ego go and said, you know what, I'll make that transition. So the beautiful thing was I made that transition within a year, and from shortstop to center field. And so when I came up, then there were three individuals that took care of me like none other. Barry Larkin was one, Eric Davis was the other, and Glenn Braggs was the third person. And so Eric Davis, you know, when you think of in terms of when you're coming to either take someone position or being, you know, to cover someone, usually there's a little bit of ego or something that gets in the way of, I'm not helping him or whatever. Eric from day one did not do that. His integrity and his willingness to be able to help me to be the best that I could be in center field, I will never, ever forget that. Barry Larkin and I, we became and our family became extremely close for all the years that I played there as well. And then Glenn Bragg. Glenn Bragg was a guy that when I got called up, he gave me a car to drive. He let me stay in his apartment. He took care of me like a brother. So those things those memories will never, ever leave my soul.
That's interesting to hear you say that. I actually don't think I told you, but I have a book coming out about Reds history next spring. And there's you're involved in our chapter on the 95 Reds pretty heavily. We'll talk about that in a moment. But everyone we talked to, no one ever had a bad thing to say about, especially Larkin or Davis, in terms of leadership and just what you're saying, just running that clubhouse and taking the young guys under their wing a little bit, and really seemed like two really amazing leaders of men in some ways.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and the thing that resonates the most is the impression from a young perspective in terms of what the older individuals can give you. And then when you in the game become the adult, I'll say, then you know how to give it back to the young individuals. So that's why I believe that it's so critical to have legends around to be able to show the young generation in terms of what it means to be respectful, what it means to be an ambassador to the game and to your community, what it means to really go out and do the best that you can do and give what you can give to win that ball game that day.
You played with a lot of great players over the years. Where does Barry Larkin rank in terms of just playing ability amongst the players you've played with?
Well, I believe that the baseball world has spoken, and they have spoken in a powerful way. And what I mean by that is he's in the Hall of Fame. And so what he has done for one team, for one organization for so long, it's mind-blowing. It's hard to rate him in terms of numbers, but I would have to say him and Ozzie Smith is one and one.
I can buy that, but I want to talk about Reggie Sanders again. 1992 was your first full season in the big leagues, and finished fourth in rookie of the year voting. Had a really good year, .274 average, 12 home runs, played 116 games. And I think you made the team out of spring training. Is that right? You were on the opening day roster?
Yeah. You know what's funny? So here's a funny story. So I went down to, I went down to before the spring training season. This was before I got called up. And this is before I got to 95. But I got called up. And then so in spring training, I had the opportunity to really open some eyes again. So here I am. I'm in the lineup. Then we're facing Nolan Ryan, right? So I'm like, oh, okay,
right.
Okay, this is a good thing. This is good. So then, you hear all these stories about, you can't show Nolan Ryan up. You know, if you hit a home, if you do anything great off of him, you got to make sure you be respectful and run it out and not show him up. Okay. So here we are in spring training. I think we were in Winter Haven. So I end up hitting a home run. So I wasn't even excited about the home run. I was speeding my butt around the bases so that I wouldn't get hit the next time. So it's amazing what people will say to you in terms of impression. But I'm sorry. But anyway, back to that.
No, that's a great story. Tell me about your first experience and all your experiences, I guess, really, with opening day in Cincinnati. That's a special day in town.
Yeah, it is. So opening day is, obviously a huge deal for the Reds organization. Do they still do it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay. So, obviously the parade and what the whole community comes together and really celebrate the new season and the excitement that brews, around the energy of that year. And I just remember, just walking, because I lived in on East Avenue, so I lived close to the ballpark where I could literally walk to the ballpark. So I remember, walking to the ballpark during opening day and before obviously all the festivities, but just the love in terms of people stopping and saying, "Man, we are so excited for the season. We're so excited for you. We're so excited for everyone." And just the love and energy in terms of what that town just means for the Reds and the love that they bring every single day, win or lose. And also, too, it is a tough town in terms of if you're not doing well, they will let you know real quick that you need to get your butt together.
That's true. It's true. But that was a pretty good first sort of full season. I mean, your rookie year, technically your rookie year. Were you starting to feel at that point and then into 93 like you'd arrived and were ready for bigger things?
Yeah, well, I mean, the season, the 95 season itself obviously was a stance in terms of I'm sorry, my phone is ringing. Hold on one second.
That's fine.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Okay. So the 95 season for me was a season of believing and knowing that I had the ability to go beyond. And so I was able to get comfortable enough to start to realize my strengths. And also recognize my weaknesses, but more importantly, stay within my strengths, and also communicating with some of like Barry Larkin and Eric Davis and Billy Hatcher. We had Kevin Mitchell at that time as well. I mean, we had Ron Gant. I mean, we had some amazing guys, and so willing and the willingness for our community within our club to really learn. From those individuals, for myself to be able to get to the next level. So 95, you're absolutely right, was that next level for me, and also being able to sustain that, and from a mental perspective as well, and diving into that with them, and really learning how to do that. So yeah, 95 was a beautiful year.
Obviously, the team won the Central Division that year, but coming into the year, I imagine there had to be a lot of confidence because the year before, you guys were first place in the Central, and the strike happened, and no World Series that year. But coming into 95, did you personally did the team sort of feel like this is going to be our year to really do something? Because it was kind of a loaded team, especially the offense.
Yeah, it was an extremely loaded team. We had Davey Johnson, that was the manager at the time, and so Dave Johnson obviously believed in us. He obviously is a great manager and a great man, but from a team perspective, we really had some guys that were tough, that knew the game. They knew what they needed to do to win the series or the game that day. And I think once when we got to postseason, one of the difficult pieces, I think that was for me, because I was in my fourth at that year, is I had a rough postseason, and so one of the things I wasn't able to control during that time, my emotions, and I really wanted to happen fast. I wanted to do it. I wanted to be the guy. I really wanted to prove that, you know, that I have arrived, and ended up not doing so well because my thought pattern was not correct at that time when we're talking about in the postseason. But nonetheless, and that's one of the things I always think about in terms of, you know, when I'm sharing to young individuals, you know, for the first time, is that experience as well.
So did that experience, and of course you faced three Hall of Fame pitchers in that Braves series. It's not like you were facing just anybody, but did the fact that you, did the fact that you did sort of not live up to what you wanted to do in that series, you ended up playing in three World Series, I think, afterwards. Do you think that experience really helped you later in your career as you got into those situations more?
Yeah, it did. It did. It did a lot. You know, it was kind of redemption, you know, for me. But obviously, you know, even when you do have the success, and you're able to overcome, in the back of your mind, there's still those scenarios in terms of what that is and what could have been. And so just for me, it's like family, right? When I think of the Reds, it's like family. It's like my first child. And so when you do something or not do something, then it always reminds you of that. So, yeah, but the redemption part of that being in the other three World Series was gratifying as well.
You made the All-Star team that year as well. How was that experience? I think it was in Arlington, Texas?
Oh, yeah. So Arlington, Texas, and then I was in the Home Run Derby, which is totally different
right,
from what it is today. But, yeah, so I was in the Home Run Derby as well. I think Ron Gant was in the Home Run Derby at that time as well. So, okay. So the Home Run Derby, we're in Arlington, and I'm feeling very, very good. And so, you know, hitting the ball out easily in Arlington, I had a guy that was throwing the ball extremely well. So then I get this one, I forget who it was, but I get this guy that's throwing almost sidearm. and I'm like, oh my God. Like, so I'm like, okay, Red, you got to do this. So I think hitting two home runs in the Home Run Derby contest. So I'm just like, oh my God. So anyway, but that was a great experience, getting an opportunity to represent, obviously, the Reds, and that whole All-Star experience is obviously a unique and a fun experience for our players to experience, and hopefully, you know, you know, all players will get an opportunity to experience that one time.
You know, I mean, you deserve to be there. You hit .306 that year with 28 home runs, 99 RBIs at the end of the day. But it being your first time there, was it strange just walking in that clubhouse, knowing that you deserve to be there, but looking around and seeing all these stars a little older than you, a lot of them. What was that experience like?
Yeah. It was quite a humbling experience. You know, there's so many people that, number one, media, when you walk into the clubhouse, it's just infused with so many people. So you literally have to go around and say hello to each individual, because you have to kind of, you know, dive in and dive out of people. But just the love and respect in terms of what each player have shown, and thank you in terms I was thinking of a story, you know, in terms of Mike Piazza, and Mike Piazza and I, we were side by side, at, you know, in locker at that time, And obviously, you know, he's a Hall of Famer as well. And just the one-on-one connection that we had at that time in a very short period of time is something that him and I, we kind of carry to this day. And so, so those connections in terms of just players that you may not get an opportunity to be with, but at that time being with them and really developing relationship is really what it's about as well.
Absolutely. Well, a great year. You know, they have this stat called wins above replacement now, where they try to take not just hitting, but also defense and base running and taking everything into account. And, you know, Barry Larkin won the National League MVP that year. You finished sixth in the voting, but you actually led the Reds in this wins above replacement. According to the newfangled statistics, you were the most valuable player on the Reds that year. That's how good a year that was in the context of the way baseball was in 1995. And it's also why I think it's sort of a real oversight that you've not in the Reds Hall of Fame yet, but we'll see what we can do about that. But was that the most memorable?
Thank you.
Was that the most memorable season of your career in Cincinnati?
Yeah, that would have to be the most memorable. Obviously, getting called up for the first time is quite memorable as well. But I would have to say, in terms of numbers, I would have to say 95 is the one.
Now, you know, 96, 97, 98, the Reds were third place, fourth place. You know, Ray Knight took over, and then Jack McKeon took over. And as 98 ended, going into the next season, February 2nd, 1999, you may remember that date, when you were traded to San Diego.
Yes.
How'd that feel to be traded away from Cincinnati?
Well, that was a little daunting as well. You know, being an organization for a little bit of time and coming up with them as well, and then getting traded for the first time was a little scary, but at that time I know I needed it the organization needed it to happen, so I get that. So I got the call and from Jim Bowden, and then they said San Diego, so which was a little at ease because my wife is from San Diego.
So
it made it a little easy on that perspective in terms of that. But anyway, going to San Diego at that time was good, and which was great. I had a great year there. You know, when I left Cincinnati, and also getting an opportunity to play with Tony Gwynn as well was phenomenal too.
Yeah, you did have a really good year there, and then, I guess that was the end of the longest time you had with any team in baseball, and certainly your first organization. When you think back on Cincinnati and on the Reds, are there things that stand out that made that time special to you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it does. I mean, even like when I was with San Diego and I came back to play against the Reds, you know, that in terms of what the fans and the community and the organization too, you know, just being there and the media when I was there, I mean, just the smiles and the satisfaction in terms of just care that they shown to me at that time was just phenomenal. But the memories and those things that, you know, I've talked about earlier are things that will, even for my wife, would never, and my kids. I mean, I had, before I left, I had two kids at that time, and so my kids even remember, Family Day, and my wife. I mean, we would literally, pick a school and would do backpacks for the whole school. I mean, we would give to the community like we've never given to any community. So, I mean, so we really tried our best to entrench ourselves into that community in a thoughtful and also in a meaningful way.
Well, it was a, you know, it was a great run, a really superb career. And, you know, we've posted the stats that are all these, lots of websites have about why it's one of the better careers in Reds history. But, you know, one thing I wanted to talk to you, putting all that aside, is I wanted to ask you a little bit about your foundation, which I've been learning about, and I think it's outstanding. You want to tell us a little about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my foundation was developed because of my brother Demetrius, who has autism. And so he's 38 years old now. And so when you think 30 years ago, you know, it was 1 in 10,000, and today it's 1 in 68 kids that are diagnosed, 1 out of 68 kids that are diagnosed with autism. And it's 1 in 42 diagnoses, four times as many boys as it is girls. But it's a very tough, you know, scenario to go through in terms of the family. But I wanted to develop my foundation to support him as well as other individuals just like him. And so what we do within our foundation is we create fun games, events for communities. And it's called the Advantage Games, and it's learning, it's education, it's job placement, housing placement. I mean, you name it, we try to support the family in whatever way we can. And we have wonderful organizations. We have providers throughout the community. And also we partner with other organizations to make sure that we are helping them as well in their efforts to support the community as well. My brother, he's doing extremely well. He's working, so which is phenomenal. We're working on this independent piece. So we have someone that comes into the home Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and so is in training in terms of helping him to hopefully be able to make that transition. And then lastly, you know, it's one of those issues that we're dealing with in terms of healthcare. And so we are diving into the healthcare component of making sure that we support these individuals as well.
Well, you're doing outstanding work. And I would encourage everyone that's listening to this, go to ReggieSandersFoundation.org, donate, do what you can to help support that cause, because really just doing amazing work. And I really appreciate you taking that on. Well, and I also appreciate you coming on and talking to me for just a moment here. I'll let you go, but really hope we get the chance to see you in Cincinnati here in sometime in the near future.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you to the Reds Nation, and you guys keep rocking. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.